America, live and underway here on ESPN alongside Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. This is episode 347. And as always, Herc, it's a pleasure to be with you. It's even more of a pleasure to see you in such beautiful gear, my man. Show it off.
Oh, this little thing? So most of you don't know, but before they were the San Jose Earthquakes of Major League Soccer, because they were the Earthquakes before that, they were the San Jose Clash and one of the better logos in all of professional sports. I have no idea why these MLS clubs move away from those things. Name an FC, I guess, or United. What is that beautiful thing you're wearing?
Hey, this is from our good friends at Hummel. It's the official kit of the national teams of Puerto Rico. So, as always, shout out to the good folks at Hummel. They do great work. But also, shout out to the Federation in Puerto Rico. They're doing some good work as well. We've seen success with the youth national teams. The women's national team had a great Gold Cup as well. Remember, they got kind of eliminated there on the drawing of lots, the famous drawing of lots.
That's right.
They got CONCACAF. They got CONCACAF.
They did CONCACAF.
But they look good doing it, man. Beautiful kits. Beautiful kits, Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that little star around the shield. That's cool.
And Hummel. All right, coming up in this edition of the show, we are going to hear from Allie Krieger in a little bit. We're going to talk about the U.S. women's national team. We're also going to talk about a coaching change in the NWSL for the team that I predicted would win, would win it all. Not a good start to Seb's predictions here in 2024. We're also going to have a one-on-one with Haji Wright and Tom Hamilton. Haji Wright, of course, with Coventry City playing in FA Cup semifinals this weekend against Manchester United. What an opportunity for the young American there. But speaking of young Americans in Europe, let's start in the Europa League quarterfinals. Her AC Milan taking on Roma. Second leg was today after a first leg that Roma won 1-0. Second leg, Roma wins 2-1. They advance 3-1 on aggregate as we take a look at Christian Pulisic's heat map for the day. He got the start, just like Yunus Musa did. Both were subbed off actually at the same time in the 69th minute. Herc, what did you make of Pulisic's performance today?
Okay, we're going strictly Pulisic on this one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I could kind of
get your shot at Musa.
Well, I could kind of lump it in both. In the same thing, if you will, and let me explain myself. Like, I should be rating Stefano Pioli. I should be rating the head coach here because what are you doing? Now, many are going to see this game and see Christian Pulisic and think he played, you know, right winger. I don't think he played as a right winger. And I'll get to Yunus Musa in a second, but he essentially played as a double 10, free roaming, you know, player underneath. And he would find himself in the center. He would find himself oftentimes on the left-hand side. But regardless of where he found himself in that hybrid 10 position, it wasn't good. It wasn't great. It wasn't the Christian Pulisic that we have been accustomed to this season. I saw this crazy stat earlier today that said that Christian Pulisic is the first player to score 10 goals and none of them be, at least 10 goals, and none of them be a penalty kick since Kaká. Since Kaká, of the 2005-2006 season. That was a legendary player for them. He's been that good. And he was ghosted this game. We didn't see a Christian Pulisic on the ball dictating things. We didn't see a Christian Pulisic moving players, taking players 1v1. He had one duel. One duel. He didn't win it, but he had one duel, 1v1. That is crazy to me that a player can be so successful for you, so good, and you take him out of where he's been good for you. In the biggest of games, Stefano Pioli tinkered, and it didn't result in his way. And in that tinkering, Christian Pulisic's role, I don't know what it was. I don't know what the instructions were, but it was one that did not benefit him, and he did not look good in.
Well, given the magnitude of this game and the fact that Pulisic has produced so much this season, right, the numbers you mentioned are exceptional for him. I think it was pretty disappointingly quiet today, but it didn't feel for me, Herc, all that different from the first leg, where you just didn't really feel like he was getting on the ball that much. And beyond that, like, AC Milan was getting themselves into positions where Christian Pulisic would be dangerous. And I know we brought it up on the last show, and I was very adamant that I want to see him in the middle of the field, playing in that center midfield role, which, like you said, he's kind of listed as a right wing today, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek is playing more centrally. But you could tell he wanted to kind of get into those spaces, and it was a little bit of an awkward fit. I think my biggest concern here is back to the coach. It is Pioli. And it's if ever, Herc, you were going to be aggressive. And I believe that Milan's maybe not best lineup, but most aggressive lineup is the one that has Pulisic in that 4-2-3-1. Do what you want with the guys around him. I think Leao's obviously one of them.
But why is it? Because you want Chukwueze in the field, because as of late, he's been very good.
I want Chukwueze on the field, and I want Pulisic in the middle. Really, what I truly want is I want Pulisic on the ball. I used to say that for him, But I think after what we've saw in the first leg and now in the second leg, especially the second leg, Herc, where you're down 1-0, you have to go for it, that Pioli didn't see what I think I see, which is that's where Milan is at their most aggressive. And he didn't go with Pulisic there in the middle. And instead, he did this weird other hybrid thing. To me, it was just a miss from the manager. And I think we saw that in both the second leg and the first leg. Milan never really looked like they were the better team over the 180 minutes. And I think on paper, a lot of people would have picked them to go through.
Absolutely. Listen, all credit to Roma, who's now, I think, made a semifinal, European semifinal, fourth season in a row. Obviously doing something right. De Rossi, he's found what works for him. But AC Milan, and I heard Stefano Pioli mention this after the game, in two legs had over 40 shots. And the only thing they had to show for it was a central defender goal. Think about that for a second. When you have Rafa Leao, Christian Pulisic, Olivier Giroud, and these crazy statistical campaigns where they're doing very well individually, that's what you had to show for it. In the end, it was the productivity came from a defender.
Yeah. I know it's not what we focus on when we talk about Christian Pulisic, but on the first goal for Roma, did you see he got kind of bodied off the ball a little bit there too? Again, not his strength. Not his strength, but it was a decisive play in this quarterfinal. I think it's one of the big reasons there that Roma moves on. They get that goal, and basically at that point, you kind of felt like
you
it was over. What about Yunus Musa? He didn't get bodied?
No, the guy that Lukaku bodied, that was getting bodied. There's a difference of getting bodied.
Oh, so what happened?
You think that's on Christian Pulisic? Is that what you're telling me? You think that one's on Christian Pulisic and not Bennacer and not one of the central defenders coming in and making sure that shot doesn't go off and then off the post and it falls to their defender? You think that's on Christian Pulisic?
I think Christian Pulisic is a part of that defensive effort, is he not? And he's the first one there, the first one that could have dealt with it.
Come on.
Okay, look, you want to give all the American guys a pass, that's okay. What about Yunus Musa? You going to give him a pass, too?
That's what I said. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you on this one in a second. Because let me go for a second. This is where I don't understand. I mentioned Stefano Pioli in the biggest of matches, and you mentioned it as well. Starts tinkering. We mentioned Christian Pulisic playing that hybrid 10 playmaker role, if you will. Where was Yunus Musa?
He wasn't somewhere between the middle and like right wing back or something.
Which is nuts to me. And for a second, he kind of looked good in it. But you know what the problem is with Yunus Musa there? That's been kind of the problem since Yunus Musa started playing. Is Yunus Musa is very good in between boxes at driving with the ball and eliminating players. I've been saying this for a while where he's not good. And I took a lot of heat, I think maybe like a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
At the height of the MMA midfield. Yes, I remember that.
About his productivity. Mm-hmm. Or lack thereof. That's where he struggles. He's not a productive player. And today that was on display. He's a very good player at driving the ball, at getting from point A to point B. But send that pass up to be effective, whether it's the cross or the final product, whatever it may be, that's where he struggled. Oh, that's where he has struggled. And that's where he struggled mightily today. Even though I thought he was good. The limited time he was on the ball, I thought he was very, very good. Mm. It's just that final end product that's missing for him.
Yeah, it was frustrating for sure because you saw the good, but you also saw the limitations. The dribbling, the advancing of the ball is there. Some of the connectivity, some of the stuff in the final third is not. I think when we talk about Musa, though, we grade on a different scale, right? We didn't know if Yunus Musa would even get some starts, what type of minutes he'd have with AC Milan. This was the biggest game of the year for them, and he started it. I think if you look at this season on a like whole level for Yunus Musa, you got to say it's been a massive success.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry. A massive what?
Massive success for Yunus Musa this season.
I did not expect
him to play this much. And if you would have told me that they were going to have their biggest game of the season and he was going to be starting at the beginning of the season, I would have said no. I don't believe that's going to happen.
For an Italian team to spend $20 million on you and you consider Yunus Musa to be a massive success, I don't agree. I think you've got to produce a little something. You've got to be an impact player for that amount of money on an Italian team. Now, are they better in his future?
Were we saying that at the beginning of the season?
Yeah.
Were we saying he's going to be a starter at the beginning of the season?
We actually had this same discussion. And when the price tag came to play, we had the same discussion, Seb. And you were talking about it being a play for the future. And it's like, for that price tag, I don't know if you can say it's a play for the future. I think you need to act. Now, we actually had this discussion. You are right. You are correct. I don't think you can say it's a massive success when a player hasn't won his position and he's worth that much for you. Now, can it be a success? Sure, because he's shown he has the ability to come in and play multiple roles across the midfield line. We saw him play as a right wing back earlier in the season. I think he can be a very good player, but a massive success, I think it's a stretch.
Yeah, that versatility might end up haunting him. Certainly at a big club like AC Milan. If you drop down a level, he might be able to lock into a position and be a starter where he wants to play. But he's just such a good, versatile guy. You know, they pop him around whenever they need him. All right, so Christian Pulisic, Yunus Musah are out of the Europa League with AC Milan. What about the Champions League? Not a whole lot of CONCACAF representation still left. However, there is Alphonso Davies with Bayern Munich who advanced past Arsenal after a 1-0 win in the second leg in Munich on Wednesday. Now, Davies didn't play. He was on a yellow card suspension. But the result does set up a tasty little showdown with Real Madrid, who Davies, of course, has been heavily linked to over the last months. Herc, how in the world is this going to go? And do you think these games have any impact over a potential move for Davies to Real Madrid?
Whoa. Listen, the only way it has an impact on Alphonso Davies going to Real Madrid is if it is catastrophic. If there is a disaster masterclass for Alphonso Davies, if it just looks like, what are we doing here for Real Madrid? Because this is the worst kept secret, I think, in all of football. Everybody knows this is going to happen. I think Bayern Munich knows it's bound to happen. He's going to end up at Real Madrid. The only way there is any type of effect that this sways Florentino Perez, this sways the powers that be at Real Madrid from even looking at Alphonso Davies' direction as if he's just terrible. Now, he's not been lights out this season or sometimes even great. He's actually struggled some this season. But for him not to have that move transpire with Real Madrid, he would have to be, I am talking about catastrophic. It would have to be lights out, the worst player on the field type of a performance.
Yeah. Beto and I, producer Beto and I were talking about this before, and it would be crazy for a team to do all the scouting that you've assumed Real Madrid has done on a player, and then over 90 minutes or 180 minutes change that decision. However, if it were to go really bad, I do think, you know, it could have some effect. Maybe Florentino Perez, who seems to be somewhat of an emotional character, says, this guy's not ready for Real Madrid. Maybe if it goes really well, Bayern Munich is emboldened, right? Either to keep him or to maybe hold out for a little bit more money. That could scuttle the transfer. Also, if it goes really bad, the fans might turn on him, which even if Florentino Perez doesn't, when he comes, he could arrive at Real Madrid under a cloud. But I think it's just going to be awkward because, as you said, other than Kylian Mbappe, which I think is actually the worst kept secret in world football, this is a really poorly kept secret. It's going to be in Davies' head. It's probably going to be in Mendy's head too, right? Because he's saying, hey, I'm playing against the guy who's in theory going to come to take my job. And I just wonder, Herc, if in that first leg, how surprised you would be if maybe Bayern Munich didn't start Alphonso Davies. One, in part because of what's happening here with the transfer, but also the old adage that we always hear, which is a team that wins, repeats. They just got the job done against Arsenal. By the way, they kept a clean sheet, which they didn't do in the first leg with Davies in the lineup.
That had more
to
do with Arsenal.
Could you see a possibility where Davies doesn't start, or do you think he's got to go in this first leg for Bayern Munich?
I think he's got to go in the first leg for Bayern Munich because of what he provides for you defensively in terms of just that groundbreaking speed. And if you look at what Real Madrid does so well, they do so well in transition. They got players who can really, really hurt you. And a la Kyle Walker and that sense of player for Man City and how he could clean up a few of the messes that they got themselves into. I think Alphonso Davies is that player with his speed for Bayern Munich. And I think Thomas Tuchel understands this, that that's the type of team that he's going to face in the Champions League semifinal. Because of that reason and that reason alone, I think we're going to see Alphonso Davies. But you're right. You know, the adage is team that wins repeats. And this is a player who's kind of been, I wouldn't say up and down, but not shown his best this season. But I just think he's too much of a supreme athlete to be left out against a team like Real Madrid.
Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, what a matchup we have coming our way in the Champions League semifinals. Let's run it back with some more European action. We'll go to the Europa League quarterfinals here because we did have a lot of games on this Thursday. Mikel Antonio scored a goal for West Ham in a 1-1 draw against Bayer Leverkusen. Was enough at the end of the day as Leverkusen won the first leg, but still, a goal for the Jamaican international, Herc.
Yeah, goal's a goal. It's a good goal as well. One that gave him hope for a second. No more than a second. There was a while that Leverkusen was maybe nervous about where this could go, and that streak ending. I'm talking about that. Is that 44 or 43 games that they had going on at this place, unbeaten streak?
Shocker, Leverkusen got a late goal in that game to take care of business. Europa Conference quarterfinal, Lille against Aston Villa. This one went to penalties. Jonathan David slams his home against Dibu.
Yeah.
Got fired up.
That was the last chance right there for Jonathan David. And guess who's going to step up right here? It's El Leon, Leon Bailey. Oh, no, Leon, you've been so good this year for Aston Villa.
Bailey denied from the spot, but in the end, Aston Villa, thanks to that man, the Argentine World Cup hero, advancing to the semifinals of the Europa Conference League. That's the Leo fans there crying at the antics of Dibu Martinez once again. All right, Herc, so here's a look at the CONCACAF representatives left in the respective Final Fours across European football. We got Alfonso Davies, Keylor Navas, Leon Bailey, and hey, don't forget about Amir Murillo there, the Panamanian at Marseille.
They're
in the
Michael
last
Murillo?
Four of the Europa League. Yes, there it is. All right, so we only got four, Herc. Not a big number. Something, nothing, or everything. What does it say about our region?
Whoo! This is something for sure, right? Because we're not just limiting to Champions League. We're counting Europa League, Conference League, mm-hmm. which leads me to what I've been...
We're trying to spread that net as wide as we can to include more guys, and we still only got four.
Yeah, which leads me to what I've said for quite some time, that the only player who even graces that world-class level or has been gracing that world-class level for the last 2 years, 3 years, if you will, is Alfonso Davies. And he's the only player that we can mention when we use the term world-class. Not Christian Pulisic, not a Leon Bailey, not a Jonathan David. The only player, not even Keylor Navas, who now, since he's been in PSG, he's a backup to Gianluigi Donnarumma. The only player that could be categorized as world-class is Alfonso Davies. That's why this is something. He's the only player in this confederation that could be considered world-class. And that's kind of sad and should be eye-opening mm-hmm. for a lot of fans out there, a lot of people out there, that the only world-class player or close to world-class is Alfonso Davies.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't a surprise to anybody, right? We were in Qatar. We saw how CONCACAF did. The U.S. was by far the best team there for CONCACAF, and they won one out of four games, you know? So it's not like this region has a great track record in World Cups, and certainly not at the last World Cup. Now, I get it. You're saying Pulisic is not at the Davies level? Yes, but he has won a Champions League, right? And so we have a few guys
over the
past few years. You've got guys like Kaylor. You've got guys like Chicharito. You've got guys like Rafa Marquez who have been at that elite level and played at those big games. And right now, as I look at the current crop, there's a Pulisic there, right about. But then I think of, like, who could join it? And outside of the guys we just saw there, maybe like a Jonathan David or a Leon Bailey, David is probably the highest in the pecking order of everybody else, because Leon Bailey, man, he'd what, have to do it for another year or two at a place like Villa to get that move? David seems to be on the precipice of going to a very big club. And so that's really the conversation here. World class is one thing, dude, but that's a ways off. We're just talking about guys playing basically for big clubs that do well. And I think Jonathan David could be the next guy to join that group. The world-class group, not the elite group, but that group of rare CONCACAF guys that do play for big clubs that get to big games.
Yeah, Weston's one of those cases right now. Leon Bailey's at a big club. They're currently, I believe, fourth in the Prem right now, and he's having a great season. But you're certainly right. Jonathan David, per reports, Napoli's in there. Chelsea's in the mix as well. I believe Inter Milan, he's got a lot of clubs chasing him. Do not forget that Santi, you know, he may not be doing well, Santi Jimenez, at the moment, but he was linked not too long ago, 3-4 months ago, to some of the biggest clubs in the world.
Yeah, I still think I'd put him squarely behind Jonathan David in the pecking order as far as, you know, who's most likely to get that move, and certainly anytime soon.
That's a dig by the producer. No need to take a dig at Spurs.
Let's move on to Barcelona. All right, Barcelona, speaking of things the producer loves, they were eliminated from the Champions League by PSG on Tuesday, opening the door for speculation about their next manager. We know Xavi's leaving over the summer, and Rafa Marquez, who according to Sam Martin and Moises Llorens at ESPN.com, is one of the top candidates to replace Xavi on a full-time basis, despite the fact that up until a few months ago, Marquez was only looked at as an interim option. Herc, what do you make of the changing winds around Rafa Marquez when it comes to the Barcelona coaching vacancy?
All right. Listen, Rafa Marquez is all of 46 years old. He's not that old. You know, he retired around 39 years of age. pretty much like went directly into working. He was the sporting president of Atlas. That didn't go too well for about a year. He tried punditry as well. And then he goes into the youth ranks at Barcelona. He's never coached a first team anywhere. He doesn't have that experience. Now they're looking at Rafa Márquez, not because they think he's the best qualified person for the job, but because Barcelona right now doesn't have the funds, the economic structure to go out and get a Thiago Motta, to get a coach of a certain pedigree. He's a cheaper option. He's in-house. He knows the players. Here's my worry for Rafa Márquez. He's got a few things going against him. Rafa Márquez is stepping into what most would consider a toxic environment at the moment, a first team that may be divided. A lot of young players who lack experience with a lot of promise, sure, but that veteran core, without a doubt, at odds, maybe against each other. You already saw Gundogan and Araujo and what's come about at that. And how much Xavi has struggled. And Xavi, albeit very briefly, had first-team experience, and we saw the way that went. This isn't an easy scenario to manage. Nonetheless, it's a situation that I don't think Rafa Márquez can say no to. You almost have to take it if you're Rafa Márquez. My worry here is, if you look at from 2000 on, all the Barcelona athletic coaches that have come through there, when people say, well, what about Pep Guardiola? What about Luis Enrique? That you step in from that role into the first team role and it goes, well, you're talking about the exceptions to the rule, because the rest, all the rest, spent about 2 to 3 years there and are never heard from again. Maybe Garcia Pimienta is the only one that you can say so, but he's at Las Palmas. Certainly not what you would say is a big club or anywhere near it.
You sound pessimistic, man. I'm thinking this is great news. This is wonderful news. Look, something has changed here, because the last time we were talking about this, we were talking about Rafa Márquez kind of putting his foot in his mouth after Xavi had announced he was leaving and the board being upset and maybe that affecting his candidacy. And as you heard in the report there, he was basically only viewed as an interim manager. He's had some success since then with the B team. He's got him fighting for promotion. So clearly he's upped his stock internally. This is obviously, you're not wrong about money. There's no way Rafa Márquez would be considered for this job if Barcelona were, you know, sitting in bags of cash. If they can go out and get the other guys that they're linked to, who are like Thomas Tuchel and Hansi Flick, who have much better resumes than Rafa Márquez, Barcelona should go get those guys. Absolutely. If I were looking at it from a Barcelona perspective, right? But they, one, probably don't have the money to pay those guys' salaries. And beyond that, they probably don't have the money to tell those guys, honestly, hey, come here and we can support you. So they're in a spot where this is maybe the best choice they have, if not the only choice. And I think if you do look at the history, Herc, there's a history of Barcelona at guys who have coached the B team and had success. You named them, Pep and Luis Enrique. They also had Messi there, which, of course, is no longer something
Xavi
that
Hernandez, Iniesta,
Rafa Márquez
Messi
would have at his disposal. But there's a track record there. And if you don't have an option, which economically it sounds like Barcelona don't, I think Barcelona could be very confident moving forward, given the past and given what Rafa Márquez has done recently with the B team. And by the way, not to say what it would mean for Mexican soccer. I mean, Mexico doesn't have a coach anywhere, has never had a coach that would have access to something like this. And suddenly Rafa Márquez could have it. I'm very optimistic on this, what it could mean, but also that it'll get done. Because one of the outlets reporting it is basically Barcelona's mouthpiece. It's Sport. And they're saying he's the chosen one. That, to me, says they're getting the fans ready for an announcement that could come after El Clásico.
A few things there. You mentioned those exceptions to the rule. One of them had Xavi Hernandez, Iniesta, and Messi. And the other one had Messi, Neymar, and Luis Suarez in their best moment. Historic teams and tridents, if you will. There. The second thing I was going to mention, Hugo Sanchez, he's here in the LA studios. He was on Auto Nunca earlier. Got to talk on Hugo Sanchez. He reminded us that Rafa Márquez may get the opportunity he never had. Hugo Sanchez in Spain is a much bigger player than Rafa Márquez is. And Real Madrid never came close to giving him that opportunity. Rafa Márquez is going to get something that, quite frankly, you're right, nobody in Mexican football will even come close to sniffing.
Yeah, man, nobody in North American football. Just be a crazy opportunity. All right, let's move over to Italy from Spain, because there are reports out of Italy that Weston McKennie's future at Juve is in doubt. Calcio Mercato reporting that Juventus have offered McKennie a contract extension, but one without a significant raise to his 2.5 million euro a year salary. That offer has reportedly been rejected. Meanwhile, Calcio Mercato also reporting McKennie has offers on the table from MLS and Saudi Arabia. He's 25 years old, basically coming into his prime, Herc. What would you tell Weston McKennie to do?
Hold on. There are also reports that Bundesliga clubs as well. So let's not limit it to Saudi Arabia. Let's not limit it to Major League Soccer.
Do you know who's reporting that?
Who?
No, I'm asking you. Do you know who's reporting that?
The one of the Juventus, is one of those things that covers Juventus. I've seen those reports of the Bundesliga and whatnot. They've linked in other things. We could find it. But there have been Bundesliga teams. And as there should be. All types of teams looking at Weston McKennie. He leads his team in assists. He's having a career year. And forgive me if he rejects a move and people are upset. Color me shocked that a player having a career year in a team where he's underpaid wants to get paid. And I'm not the only one who feels this way. I don't know if you saw John, his father, on social media actually react the same way, kind of defending Weston. So, and here it is. You can see right there. Oh, so it's chasing money because he wants a better contract like all the other players? You have to know your self-worth. Absolutely right. You're damn right. Do I have a problem with there being reports of a Saudi Arabia team or Major League Soccer team interested in Weston McKennie's services? No. Would I have a problem with Weston McKennie entertaining these? No. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you why. Entertaining in the way where you're leveraging these teams. Okay. To get a better contract elsewhere. That's what you do. It doesn't matter who offers you the contract. Here's a contract you have offered. Maybe you're not even, no intention of actually going there, but you leverage it for a better deal, whether that's a Juventus, whether that's in Bundesliga, another Serie A team, the Premier League, wherever the case may be, get paid because he deserves it. He's been playing well.
Look, if he does go to MLS or if he does go to Saudi now at this point in the career, it would obviously probably be better for his bank account. But man, disastrous.
Nobody's saying that's
for
happening,
the national
Seb.
Team. Disastrous for the national team.
Nobody's saying that's happening. Nobody's saying
there's
that's
an offer
happening.
On the table. There's a reported offer on the table.
So, have you heard Weston McKennie say he's going?
Do you think it would be a good idea?
Of course
to go to
not.
MLS now. Okay, well that's
not.
What we're talking about.
Yeah, but
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, but hold on. There's a report.
It would be
that
a disaster. It would be a disaster, and it wouldn't be the first time it's happened. MLS, Liga MX, they're always going to be the better option for a lot of these guys financially. Well, that's just the reality. Unless you're Christian Pulisic and you're going to get $10 million a year from Chelsea. And honestly, I bet you there's an MLS team that could make an argument that they could pay Christian Pulisic more than $10 million.
Of course,
the money is the market is always going to be more here,
I
man. But if he were to come, it would be devastating for the national team.
But nobody argues that.
We saw it ahead of the 2018 World Cup.
Nobody's arguing against that. Listen, you remember what happened when Landon Donovan said that Christian Pulisic should go play in Major League Soccer ahead of the 2026 World Cup. Look at him now. He's in Serie A. He's in AC Milan having a fantastic season. You want your players playing at the highest of levels. There's no reason why we should even bring up Weston McKennie playing in Major League Soccer right now, playing in Saudi Arabia. If this is even real and they're even entertaining it, it's to leverage another team for more money and nothing else.
Yeah, listen, it doesn't look like Juventus loves him when they're not offering him a raise. But if it's between MLS, Saudi, and not being wanted at Juventus, he should stay in Italy. Because he's already proven when they don't want him at Juventus, he ends up leading the team in assists and starting pretty much every game in midfield.
Like
so,
I talk and you don't listen.
there's a future there. There's a future. All right, let's talk El Clasico because we got a big watch party coming up this Sunday in Anaheim at Disneyland. Mauricio Pedros and I are both going to be there. You can register for the main event, which is going to be at the Splitsville Bar. I think it's like a bowling alley.
It is.
If you can't get in there, just come on down to downtown Disney, where we'll be watching Real Madrid against Barcelona. Hercules, time for some magic of the cup. U.S. Open Cup third round in the book. 16 games over the last couple days. Here's some of the best of El Farolito. Their run came to an end Tuesday night. The San Francisco area amateur side, Herc, losing 2-1 in extra time to the Oakland Roots.
Yeah, but they took the Oakland Roots to extra time. And there's this goal right here at the end that sees the Roots, one of the best uniforms in all professional sports, go through.
More amateurs, Lubbock Matadors, also out of the NPSL, just like El Farolito. They lost 3-1 to New Mexico United, who scored some great goals, including that one from Daniel Bruce.
It's a very good goal. It's a very well-taken, calm goal. It's a little chip right there, delicate on turf. That's not easy.
Shout out to El Farolito, by the way, who get the tiebreaker as the top amateur team in the tournament, so they get the $25,000 payout, I believe. Detroit City, they used to be NPSL, then NISA, then USL Championship. They needed a stoppage time goal from Maxi Rodriguez. Not that Maxi Rodriguez, another Maxi Rodriguez to beat Michigan Stars of NISA.
It's a well-taken ball, too. Good through ball, well-taken, in-step right here. Watch the little curler around the goalkeeper. Goalkeeper never knew what hit him.
Love a good in-state battle in the Open Cup. New York City FC 2, they're the only Herc MLS Next Pro team to qualify for the fourth round as they beat Hartford Athletic of the USL Championship in extra time. Shout out to 16-year-old Maximo Carrizo with the extra time game winner.
Maximo Carrizo, who, by the way, dual national. Seb did not like that goal.
Birmingham Legion, they needed extra time and four goals from Stefano Pino to get past Chattanooga Red Wolves of USL League One. Four goals, Herc.
Hey, look at that atmosphere. People are having fun. It's a good goal right there. It's a good ball whipped in. What's the goalkeeper doing? No! Stay on your line!
This one ended 4-2 in extra time as we move on to the round of 32. Eight MLS teams plus eight more USL Championship teams going to enter for these matchups, which are May 7th and 8th. Got some nice regional rivalries in there. San Jose against Oakland. Chance of a cup set. New Mexico hosting RSL. And my game to watch, Little Union Omaha against Sporting Kansas City. There you see it. A rematch of the 2022 quarterfinal between those two, the Interstate 29 Derby, they call it. This one, though, is going to be hosted in Omaha, who just beat El Paso out of USL Championship. On the topic of domestic cup competitions, Herc, there are changes coming to the FA Cup, which, of course, you can watch here on ESPN+. The big one is that replays have been scrapped. If you got a tie in the first round, no more second games, which has upset a lot of people. It's a big way for some of those lower-tier teams to raise money. FA Cup games will now be played on weekends. Fourth round, fifth round, quarterfinal, they're going to be played on weekends with no Premier League games, so some exclusivity. And Premier League teams are going to increase their funding for the rest of the English football pyramid as part of what is a six-year deal here by £33 million a year, Herc. Any lessons here as it pertains to our domestic competition?
Well, a lot of parallels. Let me read to you some headlines that I found. A total lack of respect for the football pyramid. An absolute disgrace. Deal concocted in the corridors of power. Scrapping replays shows weakness, and whining billionaires win again. Final nail in the coffin for the football pyramid. This is a response pretty much expansion, the calendar, the European expansion, what is the calendar that's its response to it. You have to keep in mind that the FA Cup is the driving revenue factor, for the FA. So the FA is conceding to the Premier League, even though this is their major revenue factor. You mentioned it. Why are these small clubs against the replays being scrapped? Well, these small clubs, if there is a replay, that's another gate. That's also another chance for the promoters, the advertisers, the marketing dollars. You get more money there, the TV distributions, et cetera, et cetera. This is a massive blow to those teams, to those smaller teams, smaller leagues going forward, if you will. It just benefits the big boys. But there is some grassroots money being trickled on through. To what extent to these clubs, I do not know, but people are not happy in England.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to make it seem as though this is all good, right? This is definitely the big boys getting their way. They wanted to play less games. And the fact that they're not going to play these replays is going to be a financial hit for the smaller clubs. So it's somewhat a little bit of a similar feel to what happened here with the big boys seemingly getting preferential treatment from, in this case, the FA, in our case, the Federation. But Herc, I think there's some key differences here. That £33 million that they're going to throw on down the pyramid, that's on top of £100 million that Premier League teams already have to reinvest down the pyramid. We're talking about, when you do the conversion of the math, $165 million that the Premier League is pumping down the pyramid. Think about what MLS, all of MLS, makes from all of their TV deals, and then take out the production costs. It's less than $165 million. That's a massive amount of money.
So why aren't
the
they
Premier
happy?
League teams are shoveling it down. Because they want the game, Herc, because it's the romance of the cup.
But you think it's just the romance?
At least, Herc, when the Premier League screws everybody else, they pay for it. They pay for it with $33 million. And there's a federation that has a spine to make him pay for it. It may not be a very strong spine, as people in England are complaining about right now, but at least it has a spine.
Listen,
our federation had no spine.
Do you want to know why they didn't pay that, Seb?
And the league, Herc, had no conscience. And that's the difference. The teams in the Premier League, they have a conscience, and they send that money on down the pyramid.
Yeah. Let me give you a wake-up call.
Because they know that they are part of something bigger. And that's what's lacking here.
Oh, that's
MLS
what they know,
refuses
that's
to acknowledge that
Seb,
it is part of something
Seb,
bigger.
I love how romantic you are. Your wife must be very happy with you. You're romantic at heart. I love it. But the reality here, Seb, is, and there is
what
a major...
What is the reality? You and your billionaire friends. Tell me all about it.
Well, the reality is that the FA Cup, the broadcast rights are worth something. That the Premier League is the most valuable soccer product in the league, in the world. That's a reality, okay? Nobody's paying those amounts of money for the Open Cup. Nobody's paying that amount of money for Major League Soccer. There's a stark reality to one and the other. But you can't hide what's going on. You may say it's positive, what's going on, the trickle-down effect, and at least they're paying for it. People are upset, not because they're romantic, because they're going to lose money here, Seb. These smaller clubs, it's literally a nail in their coffin. There is no
romantic thing
about it.
What's going to happen here? What's going to happen to smaller clubs that don't play? They don't get the gate. And on top of that, Herc, they don't get any money down the pyramid.
So
our smaller
point.
Clubs get screwed double.
You're making my point, Seb.
What?
You're making my point, Seb. I'm telling you, this isn't a good thing. I'm not trying to further drive the point of Major League Soccer. We've driven that point with Major League Soccer in the Open Cup. But you're trying to use this to drive that point. It's not the same thing. That's what I'm telling you.
Wow. So Premier League teams getting bossed by their federation. The FA in England has the stomach, the guts to stand up to Manchester United.
Lower getting bossed
but our
by the
federation
Premier
doesn't have the guts to stand up to little old MLS.
Seb, it's the Premier League who's bossing the rest here.
Yes, but somebody at the federation is saying, okay, fine. You know what? Go ahead and we'll give away the replays. But give us
Why
an extra 33 million
it,
pounds.
Seb? Why are they doing it? Because the Premier League has them held hostage with this. They're calling the
shots.
Then
why doesn't the Premier League just leave? Why doesn't the Premier League just leave like MLS?
Maybe that's the next step, Seb. I don't know.
Because their federation has a spine. That's why.
No, they don't, Seb. They don't have a spine or they wouldn't do this.
They got something. They got something that our federation doesn't.
Money.
A reminder, many more conversations like this on ESPNFC. Available for you 7 days a week right here on ESPN Plus, and we do cover the FA Cup over on that time program. Let's run it back, checking in on Caterina Macario, the 24-year-old forward, playing under the watchful eye of future U.S. coach Emma Hayes at Chelsea. She got the start and an assist on Wednesday as Chelsea beat Aston Villa 3-0 to go top of the league on goal difference over Manchester City. The assist, as you can see there, does come off a corner kick, but it finds the head of Canadian international, Kadisha Buchanan, who scored her first goal with Chelsea since joining the club almost 2 years ago from Lyon. So how about that for a CONCACAF connection in the WSL? Here's a look at Macario by the numbers. She is, of course, coming off that rather serious knee injury back in 2022. She's got one league goal, two assists through four appearances so far. Massive game for Chelsea and Macario on Saturday. They got the first leg of the Champions League semifinals against Barcelona. Speaking of the Champions League, why don't we bring somebody onto the show who's actually won the damn thing? That's right, Ali Krieger, back in 2008 with Frankfurt. Is there anything, Ali, you haven't won?
Olympic gold, because I was injured. And then we lost to Sweden in the quarterfinals in 2016 in Rio. So that gets me. That gets me still. But at least I was there. I could say I'm Olympian. So that's good with me.
Way to go, Seb. Always bringing up the sore spots in somebody's resume here on Football Americas. All right, let's get to Macario. Ali, how important of a player is she to the future of the national team? And what makes her special in your eyes? Because to me, she's a player that we hear a lot about. But because she's over in the WSL, we don't necessarily see her as much.
Yeah, she's an incredible asset to the national team. She's really young, so she has many years to perform at her best, as she's shown already. We've missed her the past couple of years through that ACL injury, and just the recovery process has been a little slower than what people have wanted and wished for, and I'm sure she has wished for. So seeing her back out, you know, on the pitch, assisting, scoring goals, making an impact. She's versatile. She sees the game just differently. She has a knack for goal. She wants to be in and around the box at all times. She finds herself in positions to score and create things that can happen and be successful for the team. So it's really exciting to see her back. I do feel like she's such an asset for the national team. She makes an impact immediately. The way she sees the game is just different from a lot of the younger players in the sense that she knows how to find the spaces in and around the goal where she can be super effective. And she gets into positions that can help the team win. And so I think that she has just this vision of wanting to succeed and wanting to impact the game in a positive way. She's versatile. She can play the nine. She can be a target forward. She loves the ball to feet. She's strong, so she can have that hold up play. Also lay it off, get in behind. The way that she can see the goal and put the ball on target, low, driven with pace and purpose, that's something that she does really well too. So I think the national team and also club, they really value her and appreciate that part of the game. And I think we've missed it the past two years. And I think I've missed it personally, seeing how she was right before her injury and now finally getting back to that Katarina Macario that we've all wanted to see the past couple of years. And I'm so happy to see her back at, you know, fit, healthy, and she's already making an impact already, and it's only been a few games now, and hopefully, you know, they'll keep her in mind for the Olympic roster.
Yeah, that injury back in June of 2022, it gives you an idea of just how long it's been and how long it's taken for her to really get back to a level where she can play and contribute. Still has some time as far as the Olympics are concerned. Ali, speaking of the Olympics, we now have the finalized group for the U.S. women's national team in Paris. They're going to be in Group B, where we already knew they were going to be facing off against Germany and Australia. We can add Zambia to that group now as one of the last qualifiers out of Africa. Ali, it looks tough to me. What do you think of this U.S. group?
Yeah, it's going to be extremely tough, especially having the unpredictability of Zambia, really, and not having too many games or friendlies against a squad like Zambia. And I feel like they're kind of going to bring this mentality of being, you know, the underdog, and they're going to be mentally ready. They're going to be physically fit. They're going to want to do well because it's, you know, a tournament, you know, the best tournament in the world, and or one of them, I should say, behind the World Cup. And this is a tournament where they want to show and show well. And playing against Germany, Australia, obviously those are two tough components that the U.S. always have a great game against and sometimes struggle against. And so the unpredictability of this group is going to be really exciting. I think that you want to play against the best teams in the world. Obviously, maybe not so much at the beginning, but it really tests you and it kind of sets you up for the next rounds, so to speak, for, you know, the quarterfinals or the round of 16 quarterfinals and then semifinals and finals. So I do value that you have tough games in the group stage to really challenge you, to help you get to the next phase in the group stage games, where it really helps you focus and keep that mentality moving forward. So it will be an exciting group. You know, the unpredictability of Zambia is going to be really, really fun, especially the first game of the tournament.
I was thinking back, Ali, over like major tournaments, and I don't think the U.S. has ever had a tougher group. Some of that's the Olympics, right? It's a small field, so there's not going to be that many weak teams in it. Zambia, of course, has a couple players we're all going to be very familiar with by the time this Olympics rolls around. Kunda Nangi over at Bay FC and Barbara Banda, who signed with Orlando. Both of those were big money signings, so you get an idea of just how good this Zambia team is. Then you add in Germany. Then you add in Australia. And then on top of that, Ali, you add in the fact that the U.S. isn't really going to have their coach until what, like a month and a half, 2 months before this tournament? I know it's never happened before, but it did almost happen at the last World Cup. Is there any chance here that the U.S. gets grouped in the Olympics?
There's always a chance, right? You never know. I mean, any team can win on any given day. You know, they do have a challenge. Obviously, you hope to see the U.S. team play and perform the way that we've seen them the past, you know, couple tournaments now. And obviously, having Twilight Kilgore there, continuing within, you know, the team and the squad and the coaching staff, I think that'll be, you know, super beneficial for the squad moving into the Olympics. So they'll have that comfortability with the coach. And maybe it won't feel so new. So that implementing those principles that have already been kind of set leading into Emma Hayes's takeover, so to speak, will be beneficial for the squad. But listen, this is a tournament where you have to win and you have to show up, and there's going to be teams there who are the best of the best, and you can't allow yourself to just take time to get used to the tournament. You have to perform well at the very beginning, and you have to show up and show out. And these are the tournaments where, you know, the U.S. need to perform well and really have their plan set, their principles set, their identity set. And hopefully they'll continue to play the way that we've seen them play in the past two tournaments, because that has been exciting. And now it's just about who you're going to take, the personnel that's going to be a part of the squad, because that can win and lose you games.
Tough group for sure. Top two teams go automatically. There is a ticket for third place, depending on how well you do. So unlikely that the Americans would go home in the group phase at the Olympics, but it is a very difficult group with those four teams. Ali, let's turn our attention to the National Women's Soccer League, because we've got some very interesting news out of the Pacific Northwest, Portland to be precise. The Thorns are in the midst, Ali, of their worst ever NWSL start. As a result, Mike Norris, the head coach, is going to move into a technical director role. Rob Gale, who's been an assistant with Portland since last year, is going to take over on an interim basis. Norris was in his second season as the head coach with the Thorns, who are winless in four right now, Ali, in last place in the NWSL table. There were some big expectations around this team ahead of the season. What's gone wrong, and do you think they can salvage the campaign?
Yeah, it's surprising, right? One of the winningest teams in the league are bottom of the table right now. And, you know, out of 14 teams, they're last, and they're, you know, 0-1-3. I mean, this is, I'm a little bit shook that I'm seeing Portland at the bottom of the table, because they are usually at the top and they're fighting, you know, points ahead of everyone else. So last year, I also felt, even though they were at the top of the table, or at least in the top four year round, I don't know if they were playing the best football that they could possibly play under Mike. So for me, you know, obviously towards the end of the season, losing to LA in the fashion that they did, and then, you know, I think they beat us 1-0 shortly after that match. And then we went back, you know, a few weeks later to play them for the semifinal with Gotham. And I don't know if they really utilized their personnel as well as they could have. And I think that, you know, maybe this is, you know, part of the coaching and the decisions. So it's just unfortunate to see. Obviously, Bella Bixby is out. You know, she's missing because of pregnancy, and it's wonderful for her. But you can tell that they miss that, you know, confident, you know, organizer in the back line. And even though, you know, they aren't doing well, it's only April. They have the rest of the season to kind of climb up the table. And just like Becky Sauerbrunn had said after the North Carolina game, you know, it is upsetting, but she said one good thing is that the team is disappointing. And they're going to take a hard look at not pointing fingers and, you know, look at each other, but they're going to take a look at themselves and to see how they can kind of go back, you know, to get the little details right individually, hold themselves accountable, and then come out and perform better as a group. And so she said that is one exciting thing that the group has. They have a mentality to want to be better. They know they're not good enough right now. They know where they want to be. They know where they need to be. And so I think in this interim period, it will be a good test. They're going to want to come out and perform their best. They're going to want to showcase, themselves for the new interim coach, obviously, and perform better. And they have a great chance to do that against Houston this upcoming weekend. I think it's an opponent where they can get a win. And hopefully, like Karina LeBlanc had said, as the GM, this can kind of be a turnaround for the season. And so, I mean, allowing, I think they're like the second team that had the most goals allowed. And that is just unusual for a Portland Thorns team every single year to be at the top of the table, and like a team that anyone is afraid to go play. So I hope that, you know, for the sake of the club and just this new era and new ownership, that they can turn this around, because, you know, with a new ownership in place, they do deserve it. And they want what's best for the team. And I think they're going to do it right.
Ali, we know preseason predictions are a great way to get yourself in trouble. And I have mentioned this on the show before. In 2022, I picked the Washington Spirit to repeat. They finished next to last. Last year, I picked Kansas City to win. They finished next to last. This year, I did pick Portland, and they are currently not next to last, but last in the NWSL table. So if anything, you will move up a little bit. You'll at least finish next to last if the history here with my picks proves true. That's why we brought Allie Krieger in, because I get everything wrong. Allie, great to have you with us here on Football America. As always, we'll see you next week here on the show.
All right, good to see you. Have a good night.
And match day 5 coming up in the NWSL this weekend. Action gets underway tomorrow night with Orlando against San Diego. Some good games on Saturday. League-leading Kansas City looking to stay unbeaten against Bay FC, who's had some great performances of late. And then in the category of those still looking for their first win, we got Louisville at home against Utah on Saturday. Also on Saturday, the aforementioned Portland Thorns at home against the Houston Dash.
Can they yet win it? Hachi Wright goes to win it. Oh, my goodness me! Coventry have won it! In the 100th minute! Would you believe this? They were up. They were in the semi-finals. They were down. They were out of the cup. And they're heading to Wembley. Unbelievable!
FA Cup semis this weekend on ESPN Plus, Man City, Chelsea on Saturday, Coventry City, Man United on Sunday. That's the one we got our eyes on, because that's where we're going to find Hachi Wright, 26-year-old American, leading the line for Coventry, 15 goals, 6 assists in league play alone, plus the game winner against Wolves in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup to punch that ticket to the last 4. Wright, busy, busy times, but he made some moments this week for ESPN's Tom Hamilton. Let's check it out.
What's your season been like? What's your sort of experiences of the championship been like since you moved to the club in the summer?
A bit up and down. I mean, we've had some highs and some lows. And it's been really just, for me personally, getting through it, really my first season here, getting used to the situation, the surroundings and all the players around me, playing at the new stadiums and, getting used to the culture, but type of football that's being played here.
How do you feel the league, the experience has sort of developed you this season?
Just looking back into my previous years of my career, I think this was a right step for me, coming to this league and being around these players and the management that I have here at the club. I feel I can tell I'm growing as a player and as a person. I can just feel it day in, day out that I'm learning from people above me.
Has anything compared at all to... So we talk here about the magic of the FA Cup, you know, this old tournament, so special for a lot of people. Is anything compared to that? And did you kind of have a full, I guess, sort of understanding of it when you first started playing? I mean, this incredible run, have you also kind of learned to fall in love with it as well?
No, I mean, before I moved to England, I didn't really have a real grasp on what the FA Cup was and what it meant to the people here. I would just, you know, tune in every now and then to watch the big game or the final, whatever it may be. But having been here and seeing it live in person in the stadiums and the fever and all the social media and everything, it's growing on me.
How do you reflect on that game against Wolves? I know it's FA Cup week, so looking back to that quarterfinal, how do you kind of reflect on that moment?
The game kind of went by in a whirlwind. It was just kind of back and forth the whole game, really. And it was just it was a very open game. It felt like it'd go either way at one point, and then at one point, you know, it's swinging in our favor, then in their favor, and then back in our favor towards the end. So, every FA Cup game is like that. I wouldn't mind it.
When you guys equalised, what was being said there? Was it kind of a, right, we can win this from here. We don't need to worry about extra time. We can win this in injury time here.
Yeah, I don't think, well, me personally, I didn't realise how much time was given on top. So I was kind of looking more towards extra time. So I wasn't really sure how long was left. And then at one point, people told me, yeah, we have like 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. And I was thinking, yeah, trying to just stay focused in case. I kind of had a feeling there was going to be one more chance. I didn't know who was going to fall through, but in case it fell to me, that I was ready for it.
Talk me through that sort of instinctive finish.
I would say coached, because we were training on that the whole week before the game leading into the Wolves game. And it wasn't really going out. It wasn't really working so well for me in training. I wasn't really striking the ball the way I wanted to. And then game day came around, the opportunity fell to me. And it was just kind of a bit of muscle memory, really, because we've been doing that quite often in training from a slimmer position. And it was just a good finish.
So, like, for us mere mortals who'll never experience scoring an FA Cup quarterfinal winning goal, can you take us into that moment? You see it going, it's the 97th minute of the game, Midlands, you know, at Wolves, you've just scored the winner. What goes through your head?
From my perspective, as soon as I shot, I could tell it was going to go in. So I was just looking to go celebrate with the fans. They really support us everywhere we go. It's not like it's a small following that come to every game. We can be in Plymouth and they'll still sell the away section. So it was just something that I wanted to do, really celebrate with them, my teammates.
What about Man United? Obviously, a huge club, extremely famous, perhaps not having the best season by their own standards. What do you make of them as an opposition?
You know, it's a semi-final. It's one game. It could really go either direction. I think you have to take that into an account. And I think, they're obviously a big club with a lot of great players who've internationally club-level tested and kind of been in these situations before and know how to play through them. But I think we'll find our opportunities. Hopefully we can create a few good opportunities and hopefully make them feel the pressure a little bit.
We always use this phrase giant killing, but Sunday, would be a huge game for you guys if you manage to beat Man United. What makes you guys so confident that you can topple them?
It's one game. Anything can happen in one game. It's not like we'll have to play them 10 times or whatever it may be. It's just one game. Anything can happen in one game.
And sort of for you yourself, is this one of those sort of dreams you've always had? What sort of dreams do you have for the future?
Yeah, hopefully playing at a high level. I'd love to play in the World Cup coming into my country, coming up soon in 2026. So, those are a few of the dreams that I've had. Obviously, I'd love to play in the FA Cup final one day. Hopefully, it'll be this year, but, you know, we never know. It'd be amazing to have all my family and friends, you know. Not a lot of them been able to see me because I'm so far away. So it'd be great to have them come and watch me play live and, you know, just have that memory and that experience just stay with me for the rest of my life.
Copper, the summer as well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be a great experience to be part of the team. Trying my best week in, week out to impress the manager and impress the staff there. And just hoping for the best.
Our thanks as always to Tom Hamilton, doing great work for us over on the other side of the pond, getting that interview with Haji Wright as we take a look at the odds courtesy of ESPN Bet for that semifinal Sunday between Manchester United and Coventry City. Speaking of odds, time for us to book it here on Football Americas and make some picks ahead of what is a wonderful weekend of soccer, not just overall, but specifically, Herc, here on the platform on ESPN Plus, man. We got some great games. I know you picked some of them, which you can watch on ESPN Plus. You've picked some that you can watch in other places. I'm expecting a big payout because I think I saw your bet was a five-game parlay. Is that right?
No, it's not five games. It's three games, but there are a little few things that could happen. But honestly,
okay.
I don't know if you're going to agree with me. We're going to go with it. Here's my parlay, and I may have misunderstood the producer, but Pumas, Club America, the over on goals. Pumas, I know they're flying right now defensively, but the last three games they've given up zero goals, but the last four before that, at least three goals a game, and they were doing it to teams like Mazatlan and León. They were putting up those zeros, and Club America's flying. I expect some goals there.
Real Madrid, Club America's flying. Did Herc just say that? Is he allowed to say that?
It's one versus nine against a team that's not beaten them since 2009 or 2019 at home, so yes, they will take that one right there, one versus nine. Real Madrid versus Barcelona. Excuse me if I'm not betting against Don Carlo Ancelotti. I'm going to take Real Madrid at home to win. And if we've seen anything in El Clasico, is there are always goals. So Real Madrid win and the over at 1.5. That's going to happen right there. The other one right here, this is where it gets interesting. There's some very good ones here. Good value if you want to individually bet as well. It's the LA Galaxy, the number one team in the West, okay, versus the San Jose Earthquakes, the worst team in the league, okay? At home in Los Angeles, the Galaxy, where they are undefeated versus a team that's not just not won on the road, lost every single game on the road, okay? The LA Galaxy to win, the over 2.5 for the best offensive team in the West, and Dejan Jovalic scores a goal. He's got six goals right now in seven starts. The man is leading the league. He's on pace right now to be the guy that everybody wants him to be. All this will pay you at plus 669.
All right.
I know it's a lot, but these are very, very doable.
Okay, yeah, the over 1.5 goals, I like those. But there's six things you got to hit there to get that plus 669. All right, well, let's see if I can do any better. Let's see if I can do any better for value anyway. Woo! Here's what I'm going with. El Clasico, of course, on our air over the weekend. Vinicius Jr. anytime goal score. On its own, it's about plus 115. I'm going Dortmund, Leverkusen, both teams to score. On its own, it's about minus 230. And then in Coventry City against Manchester United, you know it. I'm going Haji Wright anytime goal scorer on its own, plus 275. As far as Vinny, look, he's got goals, I think 12 in his last 16 for Real Madrid. In that is included a hat trick against Barcelona in the Super Cup. Dude is, you want to talk about flying. Vinny Jr. flying right now. Barcelona in this game basically have to go all out to win. I mean, you want to talk about a dude in transition who's probably going to eat? Vinny Jr. I like that plus 115 on its own, but definitely as part of the parlay. Dortmund Leverkusen, count on the goals. Count on Dortmund to score early like they always do, and then count on Leverkusen to score late like they always do. I think we'll at least get a couple goals there, one for each side. And Haji, man, it's his moment. This is Football America's. We just heard from him. Plus 275. You add that all together, Herc. And usually your payouts are much larger. You're the one swinging for the fences. Here, I'm going crazy. Plus 1056 on a $10 bet. You get back over $100. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm worried about Vinny's health. He came out injured versus Manchester City. He was actually...
Of course,
actually
provided health. These
provided
are
health. Health. Check the lineups, which would ruin your parlay to begin with if he can't even suit up. Came out little injury, so let's see right there, okay? Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. Him against a Barcelona team who physically, you know, down a man playing for 60 minutes, what they've been through this season. Ronald Araujo has had some luck against Vinny in the past, though. Dortmund Leverkusen, I like both teams to score. That's a good one right there. Very specific, Haji Wright, anytime goal scorer. I think that drives your odds. Yes. Way up there. I think that's the kicker right there. Yeah. And listen, it'd be a great story. Can he do it? Absolutely. He's the reason that Coventry City are in this position to begin with.
Yeah.
That's a great payout, Sam.
If you take away Haji, if you want to eliminate that one, the first two gets you to about plus 203. So not a bad payout, but not quite as sexy as the plus 1056 there. All part of our big weekend here on ESPN+. Plus, what a bunch of games. We got both FA Cup semifinals, one Saturday, one Sunday. And on Sunday, we got Dortmund, Bayer Leverkusen, as well as El Clasico coverage starting 3 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday on ESPN+, Plus, as well as in Spanish on ESPN Deportes. Breaking news out of Liga MX, Tigres goalie Nahuel Guzman has been suspended 11 games, plus a fine, plus community service for pointing a laser towards the field during the Tigres Rayados match that finished 3-3 over the weekend. He was not playing, injured in the stands. Herc, what do you think of the punishment? Too much, too little, or just right?
Well, it depends on the parameters. Listen, should he be punished? Absolutely. But we're hearing all types of things in Mexico, like he should be kicked out of the league, like he's a terrible person. Relax. Worst things have happened, and they've gone unpunished in Liga MX. These 11 games, when do they start? Tigres have two more league games. They could have two play-in games. And potentially, if they go further, another four games. And then what? Are you also going to count League's Cup, which I'm sure Tigres won't really care about that much? I mean, there are some ways to get around this. He is injured at the moment. People need to realize this. So it could come about where the only thing he really pays is the financial fine and the community service, which I think he absolutely should do.
You good with 11?
It depends how they're paid. I mean, it's excessive right now, but I could
see you think it's excessive, really?
11 games for a laser? Seb, come on, man. And I say this with all due respect. Renato Ibarra was caught on video assaulting his wife and didn't get any games. Like, you know, he then went on to play for Atlas.
Well, if that's the default, then you can never punish anybody again. Is that what you're saying?
Wait.
If you're just going to point to an example from the past and say they didn't punish this guy for that, well, now Wells 11 is excessive.
Well, what do you think? Do you think it's excessive?
I think 11 is, if they're real games that he really misses out,
is
I think it's about
excessive?
Right. I think they could have gone more. Absolutely. It's one, cheating, and it's two, endangering an opponent. Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
So that's excessive. I asked you if 11 is excessive, and you said yes. They gave him 11.
No, I think 11's good. I think 11's good.
So what's the
issue?
If
they cheapen it by making it League's Cup and other crap games while he's injured, then it's not enough. No.
Well, there are games he can't play, so you can't have it both ways. What I'm trying to tell you is I don't really think it matters because he's injured. Like, there are ways of getting around this for Tigres and Nahuel Guzman.
So they didn't give him enough then.
What are you going to do? Because he's injured, give him 20?
Sure.
So what do you set? Because that's the precedent that has to be set for everybody else as well. So it's a tricky situation. A slippery slope is what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, maybe you set the precedent here by making it 20 and nobody's shining lasers on the field the next time. Does that sound like a good precedent to set?
Yeah, that sounds like a great precedent
to set.
Okay,
there we go.
Seb.
There we go.
20
Let's
games.
Move on to our parting shot here on Football Americas before Herc shines a laser in my eye because he thinks he can get away with it. San Diego FC are putting the pieces together. for their expansion team kicking off in 2025. On Wednesday, they announced they're hiring Joaquin Escoto as an executive vice president. Now, Escoto has an interesting background. He's the former co-owner of Alianza de Football, which was the scouting network made famous for taking Mexican-American kids and putting them in Liga MX teams. Remember Jonathan Gonzalez famously going to Rayados. He's also going to be the executive vice president of the Right to Dream Academy in San Diego, a fully funded free residential program, which will probably, Herc, be pulling some players from Mexico because of San Diego's proximity to the border. They can go down into Mexico and recruit. How about that?
Yeah, not their rules. I believe it's like a FIFA rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, mm-hmm. with borders. It's great. Listen,
50 kilometers or something, I think.
I believe
there's,
so.
There's some
50
type
miles,
of
something
limit.
Like that. Yeah, you're right. This is the globalization of football. This is what the rest of the world does. You go out in Mexico, serious program, serious Fuerzas Básicas, Pachuca, for example, Santos Laguna, they have universities there. It's not just K to sixth grade. They have full-fledged universities there, for their, if you will, athletes. They're student athletes as well. This is what the rest of the world do. And this is great for San Diego. And to my understanding, I believe some other clubs in Major League Soccer were already doing this to some extent, but to see to see this materialize in the investment and the facilities and the actual school being there, it's a great step into the joining the rest of the world and what they already do.
Yep, absolutely. You got to have a target to bring in the talent from all over the world and all over the United States as these teams continue to try to grow. That'll do it for this edition of Football Americas. We will be back on Monday for another exciting edition of the show with Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie. That's right. I sat down with both of them this week. And we will bring you that interview on Monday. Until then, have a wonderful weekend for all of you, including my anti-competitive, pro-monopoly colleague, Hercules Gomez. Friend of the billionaires.
That's you.
There he is. Friend of the
billionaires. They have a spine, he said. He defended them.